pulling a little triple duty this morning. Rocky's in Cincinnati. Rocky and Cheryl are visiting their other set of twin grandchildren, the twin boys. So that's where he's at this weekend. But what I'm going to talk about today is starting youth group a couple weeks ago, we started to talk about faith, and I wanted to get into the life of Abraham. And then this past Tuesday night, with the possibility of tornadoes, which in our area turned out to not be a whole lot of anything, I went ahead and canceled because I thought, well, I probably shouldn't leave my wife at home alone with two twins to move around if we need to go to the basement or to my sister's house or somewhere like that. So I went ahead and canceled. So you guys today are going to get what I would have given them on Tuesday night. So if you wonder what sort of things we talk about, this is it, although this is probably going to be expanded a little bit. So the passage I'm going to be in Genesis chapter 15, and basically the whole passage is the story that I want to tell. And this is at a point in Abraham's life where the story of Abraham starts in Genesis chapter 12. And in Genesis chapter 12, God tells Abraham to get out. He says, Abraham, get up. You're going to leave your home. You're going to leave your country, leave your family, and you're going to go to a place I'm going to show you. And what's interesting is God, we read in the New Testament that Abraham didn't actually know where he was going. He just sort of had a direction. Like, it's kind of like the old frontier days. Go west, young man, and that's the direction he went. He went west. And God says, I'll show you the land I'm going to give you. Someday is the implied message. So Abraham travels. I don't know how many years go by between chapter 12 and chapter 15. I would assume it's quite a few. He ends up wandering in the wilderness, basically. He has a pretty large entourage with him, but he ends up going to Egypt because there's famine, and then he comes back closer to the Jordan River, and he's got his nephew with him, and then they accumulate so much livestock and servants that they realize, oh, us wandering around this desert together isn't going to work out. There's not enough grass for all our animals. So then he and his nephew split up. Abraham says, you know, you pick a direction, I'll go the opposite way. His nephew Lot goes toward Sodom, of Sodom and Gomorrah infamy, and Abraham goes elsewhere. Well, then there's a war between the local kings, and his nephew and all his people get sort of kidnapped into that, and then Abraham has to take his men and go rescue him, and there's just all this stuff that goes on. And keep in mind, Abraham is in this situation in the first place because years before, God told him, which I think's important to realize, God told Abraham, which at that point he was just known as Abram, it doesn't say he told anyone else at that point, including his wife. Now, I make that distinction because what I want you to understand is the drama here. Abraham is described in Romans as the father of those who have faith. We are all, if you have faith in Christ, you have been, you are essentially in Abraham's spiritual family. He's sort of the example that's put forward, and I'm thinking, okay, if Abraham is the father of faith, then what does that look like? Well, what kind of faith does it take to say, honey, and all these other people we're responsible to take care of, we're leaving. Where are we going? Don't know, but we're leaving. We're just going to get our stuff, and we're going to head. Let's see, which way would west be? Let's see, probably that's south. That way, I think. Am I right? Ah, yes. We're going that way. Why are we going? God told me to. Did he now? Yep, he told me. We're going. Pack everything up. But that's how it starts. And it can seem like maybe Abraham's a little too lofty for us to aspire to. I mean, if that's what faith looks like, I don't really know that I have ever had that sort of faith, not to mention all the things that come later. But we're going to see here that Abraham gets a little bit of help, that he's not made of some other stuff that we can't relate to. And this chapter, it's not highly taught on. I was put onto it by a preacher named Tim Keller, and now it's, I think, maybe the most significant passage in the Old Testament, which that's a mighty big claim to make, but you're going to see why as we go through it. So Genesis chapter 15, here's what happens. This is after Abraham has rescued his nephew and everybody. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, "Do not fear, Abram, I am a shield to you. Your reward shall be very great." Abram said, "O Lord God, what will you give me since I am childless and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus? Since you have given no offspring to me, one born in my house will be thy heir." And when he says in my house, that means someone who's a child of one of my servants, probably. That's what he's referring to. But he doesn't have any kids of his own. And the Lord took him outside and said, "Now look toward the heavens and count the stars if you are able to count them." And he said to him, "So shall your descendants be." Then he believed the Lord, and it reckoned, and the Lord reckoned it to him as righteousness. And he said to him, "I am the Lord who brought you out of Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to possess it." And he said, "O Lord, how may I know that I will possess it? How may I know that I will possess it?" Now, he's followed the Lord up to this point. The Lord's appearing to him in a vision. It might seem a little bit bold if God makes you a promise to ask him how you're going to know. And you could imagine maybe the Lord saying, "How dare you question me?" But that's not the way God typically actually operates. He's very patient, very loving. We see it in the New Testament. The man whose son was sick, and he asked Jesus to heal him. And he says, Jesus says, "If you believe, all things are possible." He says, "I do believe. Help my unbelief." Meaning, I believe somewhat, but I don't think I believe enough. And instead of scolding him, Jesus helps him along. That's what kind of God we have. Now, you can imagine Abraham being a little bit sad. You know, if God's going to bless me, if I'm going to be this great nation, but I don't have any kids, how's it going to work? And this happens to us. Sometimes we make plans. We have a general, so we might come to a point where we believe God's got something in store for me, but I'm not really sure. How do I know? How can I be sure God really has best intentions? Now, on an intellectual level, that's pretty easy for us to say, "Oh yeah, I believe God loves me and God has the best in mind for me," but we don't live that way. Sometimes we get a little bit of FOMO. Does anybody know what FOMO is? F-O-M-O. Apparently, when Hannah was a child, this described her at bedtime. It's fear of missing out. And she would get put in bed, and then if she could hear people talking or laughing downstairs or whatever, she'd come out of her room and come down the stairs. And, "I feel left out." We're afraid we're going to miss out. We don't really believe. We believe God in some sense that he's sort of far off out there, which is a very Epicurean. They were a group of people that had a particular philosophy in ancient Rome, the Epicureans. They were all about, essentially, we would call it hedonism now, but maybe they weren't that extreme. It wasn't like wild party all the time. It was more like have a good life, avoid as much pain as possible, have a good time. But the gods, for them, they're kind of out there, far away. They don't really care what we're doing. So just, in this life, you need to just get what you can. And I don't think we realize how much of that is part and parcel of Western culture, especially in the United States. See, we want to believe God, but we're afraid if we believe him too much and do what he says, we might miss out on something else, as we see it all around us. A lot of times it has to do with money, job, something like that. When we lived in Houston, we lived in an apartment complex, but most people do, and I drove a 2003 hatchback, bright yellow, lemon-colored Ford Focus, and my niece's nephews affectionately called the lemon because it was shaped like a lemon, it was the same color as a lemon, and it was slow like a lemon. And we'd pull in, and it's a place full of Mercedes-Benz, BMWs, I think there were a few Porsches. Like, now I was in Houston because I believe that's where God wanted me. I believed he wanted me to be learning at that university, and I can see in hindsight how that led me to standing right here today. But I was continually tempted to try and make something happen of my own, because if you don't believe, if you're in moments, and I'm not saying this is, I think we need to realize that this can be minute to minute in your life. It really can. It's not 10 years ago I decided I'm going to believe God all the time and that settles it. It's day to day. I had to make a decision about what I actually believe. What's my prize? What's the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow? Well, it's not a pot of gold. It is God himself. It is living with him every moment to moment. But sometimes we, like Abraham, are weak. And we need to know. We need a little reassurance. Well, Abraham gets some big assurance. In fact, in Hebrews, 6:19, it's described, the writer's talking about Abraham and how God's purpose is worked out through him, and that we get to take part in this covenant with Abraham. But he says that this hope we have is like an anchor to our soul. An anchor to our soul. And that's what Abraham needed, was an anchor. And you probably know how an anchor works. Well, you tell me. Does an anchor work if it just goes down and it hangs in the water loose? No. Because the water currents move. If you're in a boat and you've got an anchor and you drop it 5 feet down, but the bottom of the lake is 60 feet down, what good does it do? It's got to get below the waters. It's got to get below the things that move, that shift this way and that way, that are circumstantial, that are dependent on the wind. You've got to get it all the way down into some rock so it takes hold. And that's what Abram at this time needs. And we're going to see what God does. This is what God tells him. Abraham just asked, how will I know these things will be? God doesn't scold him. Here's what he does. God said to him, bring me a 3-year-old heifer and a 3-year-old female goat and a 3-year-old ram, a turtle dove and a young pigeon. Now, Abram immediately knew what to do with this. All right, do you have the pictures slides? Can you bring up the first one? Okay, so it says, Abraham cut them in two and laid them each half opposite of each other, but he did not cut the birds. Okay, so here's, in our modern day and time, when we're going to make a contract with someone, we're going to make an agreement, what we do is sign, which is kind of wimpy, but it's important. So after the marriage ceremony, what do we get out? The contract. And it's important to have contracts. It's important to sign something. Why? Because if you break the contract, what happens? There are consequences. Now, we live in a very written culture. Abram lived in a time that was not. It was an oral storytelling culture. And they really meant business when they made a contract with each other. So what they would do, like you see kind of this picture here, they'd get an animal, or in this case a couple, and they'd kill them, and then they'd saw their bodies in half, and then they'd sit them apart from each other. And you can see this illustration, the blood's kind of running in the middle, right? Okay, next picture. So then The people making the contract together would both walk between the pieces through the blood. Get all over your sandals. I mean, just nasty, right? I think there's one more. Okay, we'll save that one for a second. Go back. You can go back to the other one. So that's how they'd make a contract. They would visually storytell, this is what should happen if one of us breaks the contract. That I should become like one of these animals. Cut off. Destroyed. If I break my word, this is what should happen. I should become like this. And both parties would pass through the blood. That's pretty nasty, right? But it's very, you wouldn't forget it. If I were to bring a cow in here, slit its throat, saw it in half right in front of you, and make you all walk through it, you wouldn't forget it, would you? It's pretty graphic. Like, I don't, maybe we should bring this back. I don't know. It might help. So that's what Abraham knew was happening when God said, bring me. He's asking, how do I know? God says, bring me the contract, essentially. Bring me the contract. So he does. It says some birds came down and he cuts them in half, but like, what do you do after that? Right? You're waiting for God. So Abraham's just hanging out with these nasty cut in half animals. And some birds come down, vultures or whatever, and he's driving them away. But then as the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and behold, a great terror and great darkness fell upon him. Now, I've heard this described, the language there, and I think this probably is, or I wouldn't argue with it, but it's kind of conveys this idea of almost like smoke. Like, I've never been in a fire burning building or anything, but you know, the smoke rises and you're trying, if you're going to breathe, you've got to get below it, but it's thick and it's kind of like overcomes you. But it's like that, but in a spiritual way. So you know things are serious, that Abraham's like terrified. What is happening? And here's what he sees. God says to him, know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs, where they will be enslaved and oppressed for 400 years, but I will also judge the nation whom they will serve, and afterward they will come out with many possessions. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You will be buried at a good old age. Then in the fourth generation they will return here, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete. And it came about when the sun had set that it was very dark, and behold, you can go to that last picture. Behold, there appeared a smoking oven and a flaming torch, and it passed between the pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I have given this land, from the river of Egypt as far as the great river Euphrates, the Kenite, the Kenizzite, the Kadmonite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Rephaim, the Amorite, the Canaanite, the Girgashite, and the Jebusite. So Abraham gets this vision, and what he sees that's going between the pieces. Now, a lot of Old Testament references to God's presence being described either as fire or smoke. Smoke filled the temple. When they come out of the land of Egypt later, they are led by a cloud of smoke in the day and a pillar of fire at night. Like, this is obviously symbolizing God's presence. And it goes between the pieces. And God makes this promise that you're going to be a great nation. And another part, he talks about how all the nations of the world are going to be blessed through you. And Abraham wants to know, well, how do I know it's going to happen? He says, we'll make a contract. Now, when you make a contract with God, you probably don't worry too much about God not holding up his end of the deal. But what about you? What if you don't hold up your end of the deal with God? How do you think that's going to go? But if you notice, what's missing from this passage is essentially God goes through. But Abram does not. He doesn't go through. Because you can imagine, I mean, he's wanting to know. He probably senses his weakness in himself. Is, okay, God, I get, you're probably going to hold, I'm not worried about you holding up your end of the deal, but what if I can't hold up my end of the deal? And shoot, this is a promise not just about me. This is about my descendants and people. I won't be there to lead them. I won't be there to take care of them or tell them what to do. What if they don't hold up their end of the deal? Well, God passes through by himself. Essentially saying, Abraham, I'll go through for the both of us. And so, even if you can't hold up your end of the deal, I'll hold it up for you. I'll go through for the both of us. This is the earliest picture of the gospel that's clear. I mean, this is clearly the gospel in an early form, where it's not you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. God, here I'm gonna earn my part. God says, nope. I'm gonna go through for the both of us. Now, in other places in the Bible, we can read about this in Isaiah chapter 53. It's a fairly well-known passage. It's all about this suffering Messiah that the Lord's going to send. See if this sounds familiar. Remember, we cut the pieces in half. May I be cut off if I don't hold up my end of the deal? Isaiah 53:8. By oppression and judgment he was taking away, as for his generation who considered that he was cut off from the land of the living for the transgression of my people, to whom the stroke was due. See, this covenant with Abraham was a covenant to make him a great nation out there somewhere in the future. I'm going to give you a land. I'm going to do it. I'm going to make this promise. It's going to happen. Do you realize Abraham himself never actually owned the land? The only piece of land he's ever recording of having owned is when his wife died, he bought a small field to go bury her in. That's it. I probably own more land than Abraham ever owned in his whole life. Now you kind of think about it. I mean, he's left home. God says, I don't know who came up with this, but Abraham's life could kind of be summarized like this. God says, go. Abraham says, where? God says, show you later. God says, I'm going to make you a great nation. Abraham says, how? I'll tell you later. God says, I'm going to give you a son to fulfill that promise. Abraham says, how? It'll be a miracle. Show you later. Always this waiting. Abraham gets his son. God says, that son I promised you, sacrifice him to me. Well, how's that going to work out, Lord? He's supposed to become this great nation. I'll show you later. Go up the mountain. But we don't like that. Like, we don't want to live that way. We think God's promises about God having a plan for your life and all that thing, that's true. I believe that. But it's very, very dangerous to assume you know what that's going to look like, that you know what that means. Because the prize is not the stuff. In fact, it might cost you a lot. It cost Abraham a stable place to live that he could call his own for his whole life. One of the verses that we usually use to quote this, Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I've made for you, says the Lord, plans to prosper you and give you a hope. That verse was given to people in a context that they did not want. It was given to after Nebuchadnezzar the Babylonian had destroyed Jerusalem and taken all these captives back to Babylon. this is shortly right after that, where some false prophets had told them, hey, 2 years, we're out of here, we're going back home. Jeremiah says, nuh-uh, those guys are lying. It's going to be 70 years, which is essentially telling all the people that are, well, basically all the people that can understand what he's saying, that you're not going home, you're going to die in Babylon. Your lifespan back then, probably 70 years would be stretching it. But God says, I'm going to prosper you here, and I have a plan for your prosperity, for your posterity out there in the future. Same with Abraham. And I don't know that we get that the prize, the what you want, that anchor has got to be God himself. Because anything else, if it's your job, your looks, whatever, all those things are changeable just like that at any moment. And if your anchor is just kind of drifting in the water of things that can change with circumstances, you're going to get sloshed back and forth. You're not going to have any stability. Okay, Clint, well, that was the covenant with Abraham. What's Jesus say in Luke chapter 22? Because that was Abraham's direct descendants. That was a little more literal. Now we know in hindsight that that was a foreshadowing of what was to come. But the same thing happens in the New Testament. The darkness comes again, and this time God gets cut off. He holds up this deal that he made with Abraham all those years before, probably 1900, 2000 years before. He holds it up. And Jesus tells his disciples what he's going to do. Luke chapter 22, when they're having the, we call it the Last Supper. 22 verse 20. And in the same way, he took the cup after they had eaten, saying, this is the cup poured out for you, is the new covenant in my blood. So we had the old covenant in the blood of animals that really couldn't satisfy. He says, now it's time to finish it because we can't hold up our end of the deal. It's God that does the saving. It's God that does the blessing. And Jesus says, I'm going to make the new covenant, but it's going to be with my own blood. And he's the only one that walked through it. And like Abraham being blessed, I'm going to make you the father of many nations. 1 Peter chapter 2, we are described. You're a royal priesthood, a holy nation. See, the covenant that Jesus made with us, it's not just for heaven out in the future someday. Okay, I believe, I'm saved now, now I wait. No, you do not wait. There's nothing to wait for. You're part of that holy nation now. You should be into kingdom building now, bringing pieces of heaven to earth now. Because the Spirit of God dwells in you. You, this is going to be a little weird. If you are in Christ, you are literally a little walking temple. And a temple is a place where the heavenly realm and the earthly realm intersect. You're a royal priesthood. Priests were the people who did the interacting on behalf of others. We can do that now. And it happens. Some of you have experienced it. You might not have realized that's what you were experiencing here. But for every marriage that's saved, for every person that comes to Rocky that maybe is struggling with addiction, and God rescues them out of that, that is a piece of heaven meeting earth and changing. And when you, like Abraham, can get that anchor deep down in your soul, you'll realize that all the other stuff that we think matters so much really doesn't, because it's so changeable. That's how you can know. You know, we have the purpose-driven life. We have all these studies. God has a plan for you. We say it all the time. How do I know? You know because, like what God did with Abram, Jesus did for you. It is a promise for you. I'm making this covenant with my blood, and even if you can't be obedient and hold up your end of the deal, I'm still going to hold it up for you. You don't have to walk through the pieces with me. I will do it myself. That's how you know. Over the years with Hannah, in times where we weren't really sure what we were going to do in certain situations, or we didn't know how things were going to work out, something I used to say, and it was comforting to me, is, Hannah, I don't think Jesus went to all that trouble and through all that pain to save us, just to leave us on our own, to figure it out by ourselves, for us to be miserable. If he loves us so much enough to do all that, I think he would love us enough to continue to walk with us. But the problem is, pretty much all of my troubles in life come when I forget that, when I don't really believe that he has a plan. Abraham had a big life, even though he never possessed the land promised, never owned any. He didn't get to see it all. He didn't get to see everything that was promised in this life. He didn't get to. But it's not as if he lived a failed life. He lived a big life. It was just different than what he might have assumed. He still traveled everywhere. He still had God bless him. He still had the son he was promised. But all of that was not, his big life was a direct result of his faith, not as a result of what material things God gave him at the time. He wasn't perfect. There are times when Abraham made some big mistakes. If you don't believe me, just basically read the second half of Genesis and you will see he made some mistakes. However, if we can live big picture like that, realizing that we have been made the same type of promise in the same way, then we can live a big life too, and it will not matter how much money you make, how good looking you are, how well thought out your future is. You'll know you have a God that wants to take care of it for you. Right. I'm going to pray, and Ben, go ahead and come up while I'm praying. Father, thank you so much that you did not leave it up to us to hold up some sort of performance, to be accepted by you, to be loved by you, that you just loved us so much that regardless